Paper 3. Section 1. So it's this old single column, page 44. Okay, so when we read the preface last week, one of the things that we spent a little time talking about is the things that the Divine Counselor brings up in that last of those three paragraphs. And let's just add one little thing to that that'll feed into what we're going to bring up tonight. So remember, he was talking about the creatorship of the Father. And in the context of, let's go ahead and bring it out. Remember, we've been sort of talking about the foundations of the Father. He mentions the first source and center and the universal Father. And then he was speaking a little bit about that next facet of the Father, the universal creator. And then, we're going to talk about the universal controller next tonight. So that facet of the Father that's called the universal creator, if you remember when we went through total deity, each of these facets of deity has a very specific nature in relationship to the three causal elements. That which acts, that which reacts, that which results, the infinite one, the infinitude, the infinity. And we talked about those seven different relationships and the seven different direct expressions of those seven elements, or those three elements, you had the 14 different then facets of deity that broke up in pairs and the seven functional levels and all that. So those three causal elements, that which acts, that which reacts, that which results, that facet that's the universal creator, it's called that for a very logical reason when you look at what relationship it is. It's the relationship between that which acts and that which reacts. That's what, how you make creation happen. That which acts engages that which reacts, and creation results. Okay, so the universal creator facet is literally that relationship between that which acts and that which reacts. Now, to bring out a little bit more of the greater details of what such a relationship means. We've talked about, think about all of those seven different relationships. Think about them as a circle that's connecting the one, two, or three elements that are being related. So in this case, we have that which acts and that which reacts. And we're going around a circle. Circle representing the relationship. And why a circle? Why not just connect them together with a line to indicate that they're related? Because you not only have the relationship of that which acts to that which reacts, but then you have back again to that which acts. It's a full circle, one of these circles of eternity. Okay, it's the universal creator. The word universal means one turning. Element number one, the infinite one, is in this. And see, it's a turning. One turning. Okay? So think about that. You have that which acts upon that which reacts. Okay? And that reaction is then a precedent for subsequent action. Back again. So it feeds back. That which acts engages that which reacts. And that in the wake of that reaction, that which acts says, "Oh, okay, now I'm going to act subsequently like this. And then I'm going to act subsequently like that. And around it goes for all eternity." That which acts engages that which reacts, which leads to a subsequent action. Yeah, and around it goes. Okay, to appreciate that you go, the one direction and then back around the other direction. Okay, so just keep that in mind, that these relationships are like that. And when we talk about the universal controller, you're going to see that they are directly invoking that in the way they describe it. Okay, and it, remember how we talked about how much you could, think of the word eternal when you thought about that functioning of one of those universal facets, it eternally, is turning. It's an eternal phenomenon. It's that motion around and around between the relationship between those two. Okay, so now, meanwhile, back to the backdrop of what's going on in this paper, the attributes of God. We had the nature of God, and now we're looking at, well, if you have this nature, then deductively, what does that imply? What are the attributes that result, or the immediate consequence of such a nature? One of the facets of that nature was, or aspects, I guess you should say, of that nature, was God is infinite. Yeah. So that's going to lead to omnipresent, God's everywhereness. So let's jump in here.
God's everywhereness. The ability of the Universal Father to be everywhere present and at the same time constitutes his omnipresence. God alone can be in two places, in numberless places, at the same time. God is simultaneously present in heaven above and on the earth beneath. As the psalmist exclaimed, "Whither shall I go from your spirit, or whither shall I flee from your presence?" I am a God at hand as well as afar off, says the Lord. Do not I fill heaven and earth? The Universal Father is all the time present in all parts and in all hearts of his far-flung creation. He is the fullness of him who fills all and in all and who works all in all. And further, the concept of his personality is such that the heaven, universe, and heaven of heavens, universe of universes, cannot contain him. It is literally true that God is all and in all, but even that is not all of God. The infinite can be finally revealed only in infinity. The cause can never be fully comprehended by an analysis of effects. The living God is immeasurably greater than the sum total of creation that has come into being as a result of the creative acts of his unfettered free will. God is revealed throughout the cosmos, but the cosmos can never contain or encompass the entirety of the infinity of God.
Okay, let's just stop there. All right, so let's take that last part first. Do you remember when up in paper 118, we read not too long ago, when they started talking about all of these omni attributes? You had a section entitled Omnipresence and Ubiquity. And they were contrasting. What's the difference between the two? You see, they're doing that again at the end of this. But even that is not all of God. So you think about some sort of a presence that fills all of the finite, or even all of infinity, whatever. I mean, any sort of domain that you're envisioning, that God, is everywhere. That there's an everywhereness in that domain. In other words, there's a ubiquity. But it isn't just that. And hence, it's not literally ubiquity. It's omnipresence. He transcends that and engages the whole of it from outside. He encompasses the whole of it, and hence his presence touches every point within it simultaneously. That difference between omnipresence and ubiquity. Now, we know that when we start to get really precise about thinking about God as transcendence and God as immanence, The Father, you know, God the Father is God as transcendence. God the Mother is God as immanence. But even though God the Father is God as transcendence, and that's what we're going to be talking about here, that doesn't mean he has no relationship to the within. It's just not a ubiquitous relationship. That's God the Mother has a ubiquitous relationship with the whole. He is transcendent of the whole. He freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity, for instance. You know, so here's infinity, and now he now encompasses infinity. But see, he's engaging it from the outside. And so the kind of presence he has within is not a ubiquitous, intimate, you know, within-like presence. It's this presence from without. It's an everywhereness that comes from without and engages the whole of the within. You know, so you have that difference. And that's what they're, you know, just trying to remind you of at the end there. Now, okay, so omnipresence. Okay, that's one thing. But notice what they threw in the middle there of that second paragraph. And further, the concept of his personality is such. Okay, well now, okay, specifically what? You know, we're talking about, you know, they throw in this personality thing. I thought we were just kind of talking about it in sort of very factual terms, this omnipresence, ubiquity, and that sort of, you know, the actuality sort of, and now they throw in personality. Was it last week? Yeah, I think it was, yeah, because it was, yeah, the second paragraph of the preface. This whole issue of, you know, when you talk about the personality of the first source and center, appreciate, you know, that you're being a little bit loose to use the same word for, say, the personality of a creator son, which is what they were talking about in that second paragraph, compared to the personality of the first source and center. If you want to be more precise, you must capture what they're alluding to here. That when he engages the whole as a person, it's going to be some kind of an omni-like engagement. You know, the first source and center is omnipersonal, technically. That's the kind of, you know, personality that the first source and center has, because it's, you know, it's not only transcendent of he is not only transcendent of the finite, but the absentite, you know. You know, he freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. Okay, so this purposing, this pattern of the first source and center that is going to be present and engaging, you need to distinguish that from the kind of very, you know, see how they said the highly personalized sons of God are clearly discernible, you know, when they said that. It's going to be different than, you know, I walk up and greet our Creator's Son. It's going to be this very within space and time pattern, spirit pattern, purposing, you know, that I'm engaging is a point fact right there. The first source and center can't be like that, but he's still personal. But it's omnipersonal. So he's omnipresent and omnipersonal. And they're pointing that out. And now, how does he... Sometimes he's going to need to be a little bit more point-like in his personal engagement of what's inside. He, as himself, can't do that. He freed himself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. So how does he get around that? Personalized adjusters. Personalized adjusters are omnipersonal also. You know, they're literal point expressions of him in time via the mystery of mysteries. See, so just to add to the mystery of mysteries, you fundamentally, to say that they're omnipersonal means that they're outside, and yet you know they talk about them as being inside. They're, you know, they're appearing in a regency or something and engaging specific facts of the moment. Okay, but they're omnipersonal. They're somehow both. in and out. It's the mystery of mysteries, okay? But, so, you see, omnipersonal only applies, you know, and so when they act, you know, they don't act like a personality. They act like this omnipersonality. They act taking into account all of the eternal past, all of the eternal present, and all of the eternal future simultaneously. It's everything they do. They can't do any other thing. They're omni in their relationship to everything.
Okay. When you say mystery of mysteries, mm-hmm. is that a thing, or what is that?
No, that's just the expression that they use for the fact that adjusters, as a fragment of the infinite, somehow engage finite space and time at a point. How do they do that? You know, just your adjuster, for instance, is a personal ministry of the Father, but it's not a person. Personalized adjusters are persons themselves, but they're omnipersons. They are direct expressions of the kind of personality that the first source and center is. Transcendent of God the Absolute, God the Ultimate, God the Supreme, and everything else you can think of. And I kind of wanted to stress that. I mean, you're not going to be able to say, you know, answer many questions about an omnipersonal, you know, being. You know, you're talking about something that is transcendent. You're talking about something that freed itself from the fetters of unqualified infinity. That it's a direct expression of that which did that. But despite the fact that, you know that you're not going to be able to go very far in terms of putting a nice little tidy bow on any question that you pose about omnipersonality, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be actively attempting to do it. That's called seeking eternity and infinity, you know? And you should start doing it to the fullness of your ability right now. Try to wrap your mind around that, in some way, get the process going of moving towards infinity. You know, until you are attempting to latch on something that's there, you're not moving towards infinity. You're moving towards some little point, 10 steps down the road. Okay, you need to set your sights on infinity and eternity, and that's a great way to do it, to try to really think more directly about the first source and center, and about personalized adjusters or adjusters in general, like we've done. You know, we've come up with some pretty handy ways to begin to understand how an adjuster works. You know, we just didn't go, well, it's a mystery of mysteries, it's not even worth trying. You know, that's what humans did forever. You know, they thought, well, it's not even worth trying to create a science because physical objects are controlled by whimsical spirits. You never know what the heck they're going to do. It's a waste of time to try to see if there's laws to the material. So no one ever even tried because they knew it was pointless until someone had the audacity to say, well, let's just humor me for a second. Let's just assume that maybe, physical things obey laws. We're gonna find that they don't, but let's just, try it. And so they checked it. I was all be danged. That actually works the same way every time you do the experiment. It's the same way here. I mean, just because you know what's the mystery of mysteries fundamentally doesn't mean you can't begin to understand it in at least some superficial way. After all, you have the mystery of mysteries directly within your mind. That ought to help in some way. So give it a try, see if you can make some progress.
But that simple original Christian concept of I can have a relationship with the creator of the universe is still in
right.
place.
Right. And all we have to do is figure out how that happens in spite of the omni.
Okay.
And that of course, but see, it's very important. See, the reason I just spent all that time stressing it. We're not going to talk a lot about personality as we can continue to go forward. It's going to be more matter, mind, and spirit. Okay? But it's important to notice that in the midst of him having fun stringing Bible quotes together again, like he loves to do, piecing them all together into neat little, sequences. He throws that little thing in there. It's like, the concept of his personality is such that, I just wanted to make sure you noticed that. So right up front, they're really stressing the omni. And because they want to build a tension in you, a tension that's so powerful, you feel like you have to make a statement of like, wait a minute, but I'm not an orphan. They want the tension to be so strong, you really can't keep yourself from not declaring that you're not an orphan. And that's the point. You don't want to deny the tension. You embrace the tension first. You create a relationship with the universal absolute. And then, in the fullness of that tension, you move towards the peace that passes all understanding without that tension diminishing. See, humans have always sought the resolution of the tension problem by moving away from the tension and creating a nice little convenient simplistic rationalization scheme that doesn't have 100 trillion volts of tension coursing through it. Okay? But the fact of the Father is that one of his facets is the infinite upholder, the universal absolute. That's nothing but tension. That's all it is tension. It is the infinite tension presence that makes your existence possible. He's holding the infinite at bay so you can be. Okay? So that's part of the story too. The Father isn't just the personality circuit. The Father is also that infinite tension. And to begin to move into a greater relationship with the Father is to allow the tension to be present. Feel the tension. Don't work through it. Don't pull back. You can find a harmonization with that tension. And if you manage to find a harmonization with that tension, so that tension is present within you, that you now have a battery that's not dead within you. You have a charge within you now. That tension is what's going to power you to eternity. Okay? If you don't have that present, you will run out of gas. Okay? You have to have that. That's what makes your engines turn, is that tension. Without that tension, you die. The spirit of truth is not in them. They are dead. The spirit of truth is a tension presence. It's part of that associative domain. It's a tension presence. Everything that's real is in motion relative to the Isle of Paradise. If you're going to be part of reality, that part of that motion has to be flowing through you. There are no parking lots in reality. There's no place that you can go and just park your car and be with God. You have to do with God. One must do something as well as be something. Okay? Recognizing this tension presence as a fundamental part of the nature of God is the beginning to creating a relationship with God that goes beyond what humans have imagined before. And will make you an engine that can actually do more than have a full, sort of power yourself, but you can begin to be an instrument of usefulness in society. Civilization desperately needs such flowing, moving phenomena.
You can be in one of each of the, or every one of the effort, struggle, and conflict, right?
Right. See, that's where you're getting in. You're getting a hold of the tension, effort, struggle, conflict. But then you don't go back. You keep going. Next is faith, determination, love, loyalty, and finally you get to progress, what you were looking for. There is no progress without that tension, because the progress, there's motion there. If you've progressed, you've moved. What powered that? It's not solar cells. It's not a windmill. It's not, a hydrocarbon, okay? It's the universal tension presence within you.
Here it says that God is simultaneously present, mm-hmm. that God alone can be in two places. Well, yet it tells us that the Creator Son can also be omnipresent within his universe.
Not the Creator Son, the Creator Mother Spirit. But Creator Mother Spirit's God. Only personalized deity that can do this. A creature is just at a point. Especially a personalized creature.
How can you say that the Creator Son can't be everywhere within his universe?
Because that's because remember he's conditioned by space but not by time. She's conditioned by time but not by space. The two are reciprocal, complementary pair. And go, well, wait a minute. I thought he poured his Spirit of Truth out upon all flesh. Isn't that like here and there at the same time? Yeah, so then read in the book, how technically did he do that? He can't do that by himself. He needs the Creative Mother Spirit in order to do that. The Creative Mother Spirit has the spirit substrate. She's ubiquitous throughout Nebadon. She's literally a spirit substrate. And on that spirit substrate, there's a modulation that has a personal character. It's called the Holy Spirit. And when he demonstrates that he's worthy, she'll allow him to put another personal modulation on that spirit substrate. It's called the Spirit of Truth. And so now there's two personal spirit ministries, but there's only one substrate, and it's her, because she's the only one that's ubiquitous. He's not. He's either on Salvington or on Paradise or on Urantia or he's not everywhere in Nebadon. And again, in order for you to continue to have access to the Spirit of Truth when you leave Nebadon, if you remember that there's a spot where they technically explain, it's like, well, how's that going to work? He's not ubiquitous in the super universe either. How on earth can I still be receiving the Spirit of Truth? Well, there's a spirit substrate out there too. There's a mother of, you have the seven reflective mother spirits, of the super universe. There's another spirit substrate there upon which, his modulation can be present. Because remember how they're reflective mother spirits, and they give rise to like the Sakonophim that are a direct reflection of a particular Creator's Son. See, they're in reflective synchrony with this Creator Son to the point where his modulation of spirit, his personal spirit ministry, can flow out onto their substrate as well. And so you can go out outside of the womb of Nebadon and still be in the presence of his ministry.
But he's not restricted by time. He could go from one point to another point in no time.
Well, it's in the sense of when he can act without having to go through all of the normal time constants of physical processes. He's allowed to connect point A and point D, point B of a physical process without all the steps in between. So you don't have to age wine. You can just take the molecules, I'll take the atoms and build the molecules directly as an aged wine molecule, quote unquote. You know what I mean? That's what happened with the water and the wine. You didn't have to. He's not subject to it going through the normal time process. This is also what the Spirit of Truth brings into the mix. Once he's a Master Son, he has a relationship to supremacy. He has literally supreme type deity within his nature now. He's acquired supreme type deity. So he can bridge the gap between where you start as a seventh circler and the supreme level where the adjuster can come down to. The adjuster can only penetrate from infinity down to the supreme level, this fourth cosmic level, where we're the third psychic circle. Okay, that's as far down as an adjuster can go in and of itself. Once he has a supreme character, he can bridge, as he is a master son, he can bridge that gap between a seventh circler and a third circler, between the foundation of the cosmic levels and that supreme level. And he's not conditioned by time. So just like that, when you have the Spirit of Truth engage you, that bridging up to the supreme level is in place, and so an adjuster can come. Okay. Now, the Creative Mother Spirit is a downstepped expression of supremacy. She has that within her from the beginning, once she's a Creative Mother Spirit. So she can bridge that gap for you also, but she's conditioned by time. She can't do it by fiat like he can. If you use her way to bridge the gap, you have to grow from seventh to sixth to fifth to fourth to third circler, and now the adjuster can come. Okay, you just bridged that gap using her gift, but that gift plays out over time because she's conditioned by time. So both of them can bridge that gap, but one of them has to do it conforming to the normal process of evolution, of growth, that has time constants. X takes so long to happen. Okay. He is not conditioned by time like that. He can just go skip all that time that it normally takes. So that's the difference. The issues of transport, now it's going to get a little bit fuzzy if we're going to try to talk about that. So let's not go off into that domain. I wanted to bring that up because this is, thinking about the sevenfold and their relationship to the sevenfold is kind of part of what's going on here tonight too. All right, so let's, I stopped her before she read that one tiny little paragraph because it's meant to stand alone as that little paragraph. Let's just notice what a fun little short paragraph this next one is.
The Father's presence unceasingly patrols the master universe. His going forth is from the end of the heaven and his circuit to the ends of it, and there is nothing hidden from the light thereof.
Okay. So this is the quoting, apparently quoting from Psalm 19. If you're familiar with the Psalms, you would go, well, that sounds familiar. Okay. This is a great example of tweaking Bible quotes. Okay. So what's actually in Psalm 19? It's pretty unlikely that it's going to have any sort of a grand sweeping character like this paragraph starts out. The Father's presence unceasingly patrols the master universe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe tweak.
Okay. So what's actually happening in Psalm 19? The sun rises on this horizon. That's one side of heaven. Rises on this horizon, goes in its circuit overhead and sets on the other side, that other end. And nothing is hidden from its heat. Okay, that's what's happening in Psalms. The sun is rising here, it's going on its circuit overhead, and it's setting over there, and it's hot. And there's no place to hide from its heat. Especially if you live in the Middle East and you're very familiar with that, or Egypt,
All
right. So look what he said, let's take that one all the way. Okay? It's a lot more, the Father is a heck of a lot more than the Son personified. Because that's kind of the spirit of what's going on in Psalm. And especially the way it's kind of modernly rationalized, you think of the Son as a metaphor for the Father, when you read that. And so you're personifying the Son as God. Okay. Let's blow the doors off here, It's going to be a lot more than going from that horizon to that horizon across the celestial dome, okay? Riding a chariot, fiery chariot across the sky. He's going to patrol the master universe. Okay. And it's not going to be heat. It's going to be light. Yeah, so it's a really fun one. And you go, okay, no, sorry. So that's pretty fun. Why did he, why did he separate it, as a separate paragraph? Again, you've got these three paragraphs, and then there's a gap. Okay, there's a, he's setting a stage here. He's challenging you to try to embrace as big a concept of God as you can first. And then we're going to talk about some details. But we want to do it in the context of a God that is infinitely transcendent, of a very good case in point, the personification of the sun as a fiery chariot riding from horizon to horizon and making you sweat. Okay. So that's what he's doing. He's challenging simplistic notions of God. The omnipresent and omnipersonal, and his presence unceasingly patrols the master universe, every square inch of it. All right, so that's the pretext. Where does he take us?
The creature not only exists in God, but God also lives in the creature. We know we dwell in him because he lives in us. He has given us his spirit. This gift from the Paradise Father is man's inseparable companion. He is the ever-present and all-pervading God. The spirit of the everlasting Father is concealed in the mind of every mortal child. Man goes forth searching for a friend while that very friend lives within his own heart. The true God is not afar off. He is a part of us. His spirit speaks from within us. The Father lives in the child. God is always with us. He is the guiding spirit of eternal destiny. Truly of the human race has it been said, you are of God, because he who dwells in love dwells in God and God in him. Even in wrongdoing you torment the indwelling gift of God, for the thought adjuster must needs go through the consequences of evil thinking with the human mind of its incarceration.
Okay, so again, in the context, he's doing what he loves to do. Let's play with human quotes. So you have all that wonderful stringing together of all these things. But look how it ends. Isn't that interesting? So even in wrongdoing, you torment the indwelling gift of God, for the thought adjuster must needs go through the consequences of evil thinking with the human mind of its incarceration. Incarceration, imprisonment, like we so often say. And see, they're just taking it up a notch. Not only is it incarceration, i.e. imprisonment. If you give ungoodness, badness, form in your mind, evil, okay, that's... you are disrupting the integrity of your mind. That integrity, that unity likeness in your mind is coming down from spirit, the unity substance. If you create a negative relationship with that unity aspect of reality, you're imposing that disunity on your mind. You're disrupting the integrity. Remember, I've pointed out they have that great sequence for error, evil, sin, and iniquity. Self-confusing, self-disrupting, self-destroying, self-destruction. Okay? Evil, we're talking about self-disrupting. You're disrupting the integrity of your mind. And there is nothing more expressive of inherent unity in the universe than a fragment of that which comes, that which is. It comes from that which is prior to any separation of any sort. Before you think about separating unity and individuality, the eternal sun and the isle, or anything else that you can think of, that's where this comes from. It's the essence of innate unity. And it's within your mind. And you take that mind and you disrupt its integrity, its integer likeness, its wholeness, its unity likeness. Okay, and not only is he now imprisoned, but you're torturing this prisoner. Literally, see? You know, they're saying, you know, it's, they want you to think of this, you know, you torment, you torture. So look at what he just did. He said, okay, you know, he's giving you all this, like, you know, this whole bit about the omnipresence, and you're going, wow, isn't that cool? And he's not only filling all of the master universe, but he's literally filling my heart. How cool is this? Oops, wait a minute. If I'm going to be in a universe where the Father fills all things, if I take the portion of the universe that I have been given by grace, the ability to grip a little bit and do something with, and I twist it, there's no place that you can twist and not have God in the midst of that. Okay? You are torturing the presence of the Father whenever you do that. Okay? Don't do that. Do more than that. Think them and then do them. Yeah. Be good and then do that goodness. Right? Because, you know, the universe is in motion. It's impossible to just somehow be passively not a passive non-tormentor. You will do something. I mean, there's nothing else. Your sixth adjutant, that's just nothing but zeal and, you know, and gusto, is going to do something. Okay? You know, you need to take the reins so that what you're doing doesn't torment. Torment is, you know, invoking the rack, you know, twisting someone on a rack. Okay? And saying that's what you literally do to God.
All right. I heard someone else mention this use of language, must needs. Is that a...
Yeah, when they go a little bit to sort of a more older poetic expression of English. You know, and of course it fits right in. He's doing all this quoting out of the Bible, you know, so he sort of blends the language into that. And, you know, think of the power of poetry in certain, you know, you know, there's a difference between the prosaic and the poetic. What is that difference? It engages your spiritual consciousness more. He wants you to get in the game here of the kind of feeling that only your spiritual consciousness can have. He wants your spiritual consciousness to feel torturing. You know, and how that is just not in harmony. Okay? You know, if he keeps it really prosaic, well, you can kind of go into a matter-of-fact sort of material consciousness mode. It's like, well, there's a place for material consciousness, but, you know, he's trying to really make a point. You know, he's getting you just soaring and then slam-o. See that? Look at the tension he's creating in that paragraph. And definitely notice that there is no mention of sin here. This is not sinful thinking. This is just evil thinking. In other words, you're clueless. You don't know that you're creating this ill form in your mind. Most likely, you think you're creating, you know, a healthy form. Yeah. You know, you have the best of intentions. You know, and you know about spirit, you know about unity. It fires your passion. You want to be part of that whole unity thing. But you've forgotten that you're a child, that God made you a child and not an adult to start with. And so it is almost impossible for you to get it right initially. You're going to try to grab goodness, but you're going to grab badness in your ignorance. Therefore, go slowly. Patience should precede this. Now, be very cautious about jumping out. It's like, I'm going to start just grabbing spirit in every way I can think of. You're going to twist. You know, you're not going to know how to do this. You're not born knowing how to distinguish perfectly between goodness and badness. You know, and yeah, we, you know, it's because it's not sin. Okay, it's not damaging your soul. Your soul's okay. It's not self-destroying. Okay, but it is self-disrupting. It, you know, it's not just because you're not telling the adjuster to unravel your soul, doesn't mean the adjuster isn't being tormented. Is what they're trying to, you know. Yeah, is, you know, is there, that's another thing. When you start to really distinguish between evil and sin, you start, well, okay, evil is not really not that bad, I guess. You know, I mean, you know, I'm only human. You know, you can't, you know. They're going, but wait, because God is omnipresent, and in the case of the adjusters, very, very literally so, a condensation of his omnipresence within your mind, go slowly on this. Be careful how you wield spirit substance.
It seems like maybe also it could be difficult when they, you know, they specify a kind of difference between sin and iniquity and evil. But then when they're writing and they don't want to always have to say evil, sin, and iniquity, maybe they kind of use the language that way where they, you know, you get the idea what they mean, but they're not, but sort of in the broader sense of the word, maybe too, or that's how I would read it, that obviously if evil and also sin and iniquity, that they don't have to spell it out.
Well, sure. I mean, obviously, you know, sin and iniquity are going to be even worse.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, you know, iniquity is, you know, I mean, that's where you squeeze the adjuster right out of your mind.
Yeah.
Okay? Because there's you collapse the space that's been prepared for him to zero, and you squish him right out. Okay? But, you know, but even, you know, remember, you know, the adjuster, again, is in your mind. Within your mind. So even error, you know, self-confusing, you know, he's going to feel that. It's not going to be painful like the disruption of evil, but he's still going to, you know, it's like you're sticking him in a, you know, against a rocky coastline and battering him with, you know, waves. I mean, it doesn't really hurt, but it's kind of, you know, you know, it's like, you know, it's like waterboarding, and, you know, and, you know.
We want to say we experience or feel God, or our thoughts are in God, but it says here that the creature not only exists in God, so is that the existential, the Father, right? We can.
Right. I mean, we exist within this presence.
But also, it says, but also lives in the creature.
Right, and that's the adjuster. Yeah. So you have this sort of, like I was saying, I mean, you can think of this, there's this omnipresence that you know, you're moving through, that you're immersed in, and then there's a condensation of that, you know, that's within you and follows you around. You know, so you can even kind of visualize that, and visualize the Father as a continuum with denser points within that presence. You know, and those points of condensation follow you around via the mystery of mysteries as you move through the universe. You know, yeah, it's you know, it's like, you know, that, you know, here his presence is sort of flat, and here's this bulge in it that's the adjuster, and you move over here and this flattens out and the bulge moves over here, see? You know, it's almost like a standing wave that's moving through his presence. All right, yep.
These quotes from the Bible that, in essence,
not all of them.
The
yeah.
How can I find where those are?
Well, I mean, look in the Paramonium. And you'll see how much, yeah. I mean, but he's going a little bit beyond the Bible here, too. He's and he's very aggressively tweaking Bible quotes. Even, you know, he's taking a little chunk from this sentence in this book, and then another chunk from this sentence in this book, and sticking them together, bringing in other things outside of the Bible. And I mean, he's being very freewheeling in that. But, you know, but the, you know, the basic essence, you know, is, you know, you are of God, because he who dwells in love dwells in God, and God in him. You know, we're in the Old Testament there. You know, and I mean, you know, the basic spirit of this is there. But yeah, when it sounds really precise, you know, he's tweaking a bit. Yeah.
The omnipresence of God is in reality a part of his infinite nature. Space constitutes no barrier to deity. God is, in perfection and without limitation, discernibly present only on paradise and in the central universe. He is not thus observably present in the creations encircling Havona, for God has limited his direct and actual presence in recognition of the sovereignty and the divine prerogatives of the coordinate creators and rulers of the universes of time and space. Hence must the concept of the divine presence allow for a wide range of both mode and channel of manifestation, embracing the presence circuits of the eternal Son, the infinite Spirit, and the Isle of Paradise. Nor is it always possible to distinguish between the presence of the Universal Father and the actions of his eternal coordinates and agencies, so perfectly do they fulfill all the infinite requirements of his unchanging purpose. But not so with the personality circuit and the adjusters. Here, God acts uniquely, directly, and exclusively.
Okay, so see, two things. You're just bringing in some clarification of what you mean by this presence that's an omnipresence. A lot of it is not a direct presence. It's an indirect presence. The second, third, and paradise sources and center have a direct presence, and he's behind them and through them. Okay, so a lot of his presence is indirect through the other absolute actualities, and their direct presence. But not so with the personality circuit and the adjusters. There is, in those two instances, he doesn't work through them. He works around them. He goes around directly as very literally the facet of the Father that's the universal Father. That's the personality circuit. And then, of course, the bestowal of adjusters from one of his two reservoirs from the infinite upholder reservoir, a fragment of that facet of deity. Both of those happen independent of the other three. So that in itself, notice how he's going to leave playing with the Bible quotes and stuff behind. It's like, okay, now let's get a little bit more directly into the fifth epical revelation and some specificity, where we're going to challenge, your historical notions of, there's just God and he does everything magically, all by himself, and, all these sort of very simplistic notions. It's like, even in something like this, they're saying, no. Okay, first of all, a lot of this is indirect. Okay, but there is some direct, which is kind of where the spirit of your initial thoughts about God came from. God does engage us directly down to where we are in many ways. And we've experienced that throughout all of human history. The problem is that we just tried to make that everything. Taking that little tip of experience and saying, if I extrapolate that up, that must be the fullness of God. It's like, well, that's part of God, but that's not everything. There's a whole bunch more to it, like all of the stuff that's coming indirectly. Okay, so now, see that? Now they're going to focus on, in these next three paragraphs, those three indirect channels. And it's going to go matter, mind, spirit. And we're going to do the first one, the big, there's, if you look at these next three paragraphs, the first one's a big one, and that's, and notice how it starts out. I told you that's where, the main place he's going here is the universal controller. So we'll spend a little time talking about this next paragraph.
The universal controller is potentially present in the gravity circuits of the Isle of Paradise in all parts of the universe at all times and in the same degree, in accordance with the mass, in response to the physical demands for his presence, and because of the inherent nature of all creation, which causes all things to adhere and consist in him. Likewise is the first source and center potentially present in the unqualified absolute, the repository of the uncreated universes of the eternal future. God thus potentially pervades the physical universes of the past, present, and future. He is the primordial foundation of the coherence of the so-called material creation. This non-spiritual deity potential becomes actual here and there throughout the level of physical existences by the inexplicable intrusion of some one of his exclusive agencies upon the stage of universe action.
What's an example of an inexplicable, an agency that does these inexplicable intrusions? We just talked about one earlier tonight. Personalized adjuster. Okay. That's one of the things that does what they're talking about there at the end. It's as if the Father himself is doing it when a personalized adjuster does anything. So there's that little point. And obviously there's a whole bunch of things that they don't even reveal to us that are similar to that. Now, this non-spiritual deity potential, this potential for the Father to reach out and be indirectly present in a non-spiritual way. The spiritual indirect way is, as the universal Father, he's behind the eternal Son, and the extent to which the eternal Son has engaged things through the Son's presence, he can, as the universal Father, he can engage. This is the other side. You've got the Isle of Paradise and its presence, its engagement of reality. And behind the Isle of Paradise is not the universal Father. It's not that facet of the Father that's behind the Isle. It's the universal controller that's the facet of the Father that's immediately behind, that is in direct engagement with the Isle. The universal Father engages the eternal Son. Universal controller engages the Isle. Okay, that's the beginning understanding that's inherent in this paragraph. Okay, there's a spiritual deity potential and a non-spiritual deity potential. In other words, he has a potential to engage things via the eternal Son's channel of unity. Remember, the eternal Son is the absolute of pure unity. The Isle is the absolute of pure individuality. So that non-spiritual avenue that's open to him, more precisely, that's the individuality channel, as opposed to the unity channel. Okay, and that's, okay, when you drop back and it says, so-called material creation. Okay, your first thought might be, they're trying to remind us that, it's not just a billiard ball universe. There's more to than just literal globs of mass. There's physical energy. So maybe that's what they're saying. It's actually more of an energy creation. But take it back one more notch. From what the next sentence is what's challenging you to, it's the individuality creation that we're talking about engaging here, not the unity creation. Okay, the so-called material creation, what it actually is the individuality creation. It's the aspect of what is created that expresses individuality as opposed to unity. That universal controller is all about that. Okay. All right. Now, and up there, you've got little individuations. Notice what they said about, the sort of the gravity circuits of the Isle and the Father as a universal controller coming in through that. There's in accordance with the mass, in response to the physical demands for this presence. Okay, now a mass is like like the footprint of the Isle. The more mass, the bigger the footprint of the Isle. It's an expression of absolute gravity, and you take two masses, and there's a relative, gravity between those two. That's, Newtonian gravity, the gravity that's, holding me to the earth, that sort of gravity. Okay, so they're invoking that. But then they also, when they talk about physics, they say, okay, well, there's a little bit more to the Isle's engagement than just sort of being the nucleus of a mass. There's also just you know, as an energy system, it's intimately involved in the whole process of the associative nature of any energy system. I mean, go to something that doesn't have mass, you know, and the aisle is still present as the fundamental binding phenomenon, you know, involved there. Okay, but that's, yeah, we're not going to go into physics tonight. That's the key is the other thing they said. So you've got that third thing. And because of the inherent nature of all creation, which causes all things to adhere and consist in him. What are they invoking there? That doesn't seem like immediately to be talking about the aisle. Okay, that's very directly the universal controller. Okay, and what the universal controller literally is, as opposed to just, well, you got the Father and he's got kind of a, you know, he works in power over here and, you know, and personality over here. Yeah, but just like we now understand literally what the universal creator facet of the Father is, that that's the relationship between that which acts and that which reacts. What's the universal controller facet? That's the relationship between that which acts and that which results. When the universal creator creates, that whole creatorship stuff that they preface this paper with, so that there are things and beings in existence now, that which acts engages directly that which results, the results. He engages the results, the things and beings. You know, that's what's going on with the sevenfold. That's what the sevenfold is coming down to engage the things and beings. Okay? Remember when we've been talking about that recently, the role of the universal controller. Because see, it's the universal father and the universal controller. The universal controller is, you remember how we thought the way we were visualizing it is, so you're brought into existence, and the Father wants to engage you. Well, how does he find you in order to get, you know, he wants to bestow personality upon you. He has this individuation of will, and he wants to identify it at a point that is you, yourself. Something has to reach out and grab a hold of that. Oh, there it is. Now let me encircuit that in my personality circuit. But something has to, that which acts has to be able to directly engage that which results. You, for instance. That is literally the universal controller. The relationship between that which acts and that which results. That's how you're literally being gripped. But just notice that the sevenfold and the universal controller are in that evolutional level there, yeah, in that fifth level domain.
So can you repeat what the act and react is?
And we're not doing react.
Oh,
we're doing result.
Just result.
Okay? The relationship between that which acts and that which reacts, that's the universal creator. See, that's the box next to it. See on the chart? Universal creator, right next to the universal controller. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. Now we're talking about the other thing, the universal controller. Not the universal creator, the universal controller. The relationship between that which acts and that which results. Okay, and that's what they're literally invoking in this sentence. The literalness of what's going on here about how the Father is relating to the individual results. This whole individuality channel that they're talking about here. He reaches out as that which can engage individuality. He reaches out with that facet of his nature, the universal controller. Okay, so think about this here. What the words that they use? There's two words they use in this little expression of what's going on: adhere and consist. Okay, adhere. Remember. That was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it, I think? When we were talking about love. And we noticed that the divine counselor used the word affection over and over and over again in trying to challenge us to have a less crude notion attached to the word symbol love. And when we talked about the etymology of that word, AD prefix in adhere, if you take that AD prefix and you put it in front of an F root, it becomes the D becomes an F. See, so affect, it's the same prefix. AD and the AF are the same prefix. That prefix means to, at, toward. Okay? And the facera root of affection or affect, that's to do, the verb to do. Remember we talked about that, you know, that they're trying to say love is a verb. Love is something that you do toward another person. The AF is the toward, see? You know, and the facera, that's the do, okay? You know, and so love is something that you do towards another person. You know, that's so it was a verb and not a noun. It was an action, not a feeling. We have the same thing here. Add here. Okay, so add is to, at, and toward. And here, that means stick. So it means to stick to something. Okay? Okay, and consist, the con prefix, that means together. And the root there is to place. So they're placed together. So stick to and place together, the two meanings there. Okay, so think about what they're describing. So if the universal controller, there's things and beings, there's results. Universal controller is there's that which acts and it reaches out and engages that which results. Okay, so you have these results and the hand of the universal controller engages them. It places them together. They consist, placed together. Now, they're not just placed together, he holds on. Okay? They're placed together and they stay together because he's holding them together. Okay? So the moment that he does that, this comes back. Those things now have this ongoing direct connection back to that which just reached out and placed them together. It didn't let go. And so you go from that which acts to that which results and back to that which acts. Those things stick to the Father because he's holding them. Okay, those two words, it's describing this circle of this relationship. Okay, and it even has an order to it. See, the first thing they invoke is not the actor; they invoke the results, all things. So they're starting with the results, and they say, "So it causes all things to adhere, so those things stick to him because he's holding them in place together. They stick to him because they're going around the circuit of that relationship that is the universal controller."
Could you repeat again what's being held together?
All things, for instance, in this sentence. Results. Okay? Because of the actions of the universal creator, that which acts engages that which reacts, that means there's results, like things and beings. Okay, and then that which acts engages those results as the universal controller. That's the part of the Father that can go from that which acts to that which results. In order for him to engage him, he has to use that facet of himself because that's literally what does that. The universal Father facet doesn't do that. The infinite upholder facet doesn't do that. I mean, the only facet of his nature that goes directly from his oneness, that infinite one-like aspect of him, that which acts directly to a result, is this facet. That's what the universal controller is. And so that's why, like we've tried to point out, That's why the seventh, in a very fundamental, foundational way, why the sevenfold has two columns of nature. It's not just because there's power and personality. Yeah, I mean, that obviously is part of it, that there's the isle and the eternal sun and there's all that parallelism. But you're kind of saying, well, yeah, but why is there that parallelism? Really fundamentally, going back behind the isle and the sun. There's that parallelism because there's two facets of the Father. And one of those facets is what reaches out from his omni domain, that transcends infinity, reaches in and grabs a hold of a result. And now that it's holding it, it takes its other facet, which is the circuit, the personality circuit, the universal Father, is the relationship of that which acts back to itself. It's the self-personalized deity. The universal Father is that hand that's personalizing. One of those actions of grabbing into the reservoir of all will and individuating some personality and bestowing it, one of those is it doesn't go out to a creature or even another creator. It goes back to itself. The universal Father is this circuit of that which acts related to itself. But he can put you into that circuit once he finds you with his universal controller hand that can engage the results. And the circuit is present. See, once you're held by him, you then get encircuited. If you're not held by him, then the circuit is sort of just around you. It's not within you. And notice how they've been trying to bring that up, that there's two aspects of this omnipresence. There's that which is sort of you're within, and then there's that which is within you. It gets within you because he grabs you. And when he grabs you with the universal controller, then it goes from just being you being within it to it being within you. Personalities and the adjuster. That's how he differentiates this within and without is via the universal controller. The universal controller is a very important part of the logical understanding of how the Father engages you.
Chris, yeah. You didn't say it this way, but that's how I understand it. God, the Father gives us personality and the adjuster, right? Isn't that what you...
Right, but we're not so much focusing on what he gives you, but when he gives you a personality, that puts you into this circuit.
Right.
Okay, we're focusing on the circuit more than the personality itself. And that circuit, there's a circuit presence that's called the universal Father. But the only way to get encircuited into it is for him to touch you, as it were. The moment he touches you with the universal controller hand, then this, goes within you, this encircuitment.
So, Chris, so we need the initial encircuitment of personality, but we need the direct action with the thought adjuster. Would that be more...
Right, you know that you don't have universal bestowal of adjusters to start with. Once he makes you, once he gets you encircuited in his personality circuit by this two-step process, the universal controller engages you, and then the universal Father engages you. Now you're encircuited. Now you can use the nature of the mother, the local universe mother, to bridge the gap between seventh circler and third circler. It's going to take time, though, but you can use her supremacy. She gave you a relationship to her supremacy, and so over time you will grow and bridge the gap and get up to the supreme level, and then the adjuster can come. That's what he initiates. And then all he does when subsequent to the mass, the seventh bestowal, is now you can go directly. Yeah. See, so it adds another element to this supplying favorable conditions. When you recognize that you're literally being held in order for this to work, I bet if I made myself something that wasn't just a pinpoint, and he had to kind of use tweezers to hold on to me, I bet I might, experience more. Yeah. Right. Exactly. That's the beauty of it. See, once you've got the literal, now you have understanding. The understanding is just right there in front of you. Once you have this geometric picture of what's going on, you understand it now, and you can start to think in this new understanding. One of the first things that the universal controller tells me, a truth that I can obey, is, should I be anxious? Should I worry that I'm going to fall? Okay, no, he's holding me. I mean, his grip is sure. Okay, you know, and of course, you know, even more so when I bring the mother in, you know, the upholder. I mean, not only is he holding me, but you know, my feet aren't, you know, dangling. Okay, you know, he's the upper hemisphere and she's the lower hemisphere. I'm held completely all the way around. I cannot go anywhere that I don't want to go. I mean, he's not going to take me off and dump me in an abyss. Okay, it's okay. I can let go of the anxiety, and I can cultivate patience. I can begin to grow faith into trust. You know, you're never going to grow faith into trust if you're impatient. Think of the peace that passes all understanding that comes from knowing that you're literally held like this. Okay? Now, live with that in that truth. Change the way you live your life knowing, you know, exactly how this is working. Yeah? That it isn't magical. And so fear can, no matter how zealously you believe magic, fear can find a crack. Okay? Fear can't find a crack in a direct, logical knowing of how this works. It's going to be okay if I allow that tension in. He can hold that tension. Yeah. It's okay. You don't have to hold it yourself. You just have to supply the favorable conditions so that he can hold it. And as we go forward, you'll see they speak to that a little bit. Let's go ahead and read some more so we can kind of bring that in so I don't jump the gun on that.
The mind presence of God is correlated with the absolute mind of the conjoint actor, the infinite spirit. But in the finite creations, it is better discerned in the everywhere functioning of the cosmic mind of the paradise master spirits. Just as the first source and center is potentially present in the mind circuits of the conjoint actor, so is he potentially present in the tensions of the universal absolute. But mind of the human order is a bestowal of the daughters of the conjoint actor, the divine ministers of the evolving universes.
Read the next one, too.
The everywhere present spirit of the universal father is coordinated with the function of the universal spirit presence of the eternal son and the everlasting divine potential of the deity absolute. But neither the spiritual activity of the eternal son and his paradise sons nor the mind bestowals of the infinite spirit seem to exclude the direct action of the thought adjusters, the indwelling fragments of God in the hearts of his creature children.
Okay, just one little thing to notice there. They don't want to really go into any in-depth engagement of this, these other two channels. You know, really they said, you know, obviously you've got matter, then you've got mind and spirit. And the whole point was to say, you know, but still, this does not, you know, seem to exclude the direct action. Okay, so they just wanted to reemphasize that even with all of this omnipresent mind, spirit mind presence of the infinite mother spirit and the spirit presence of the eternal mother son, even with all of that, there's still room in all of that spiritized presence for him to engage you directly with a spirit fragment. Because that's just the main thing they wanted to bring out. You know, and all there's obviously endless other details, but that they just notice what they want you to think about now, and what, you know, they're trying to just sort of put there so that you have logical consistency. You know, and let's not go off on the tangent and, you know, like we, you know, did as extensively with the first paragraph there. Anyway, matter, mind, and spirit. Now, what about the rest of the picture? when you don't have just existential deity in play.
Concerning God's presence in a planet, system, constellation, or universe, the degree of such presence in any creational unit is a measure of the degree of the evolving presence of the Supreme Being. It is determined by the en masse recognition of God and loyalty to Him on the part of the vast universe organization, running down to the systems and planets themselves. Therefore, it is sometimes with the hope of conserving and safeguarding these phases of God's precious presence that when some planets or even systems have plunged far into spiritual darkness, they are in a certain sense quarantined or partially isolated from intercourse with the larger units of creation. And all this, as it operates on Urantia, is a spiritually defensive reaction of the majority of the worlds to save themselves, as far as possible, from suffering the isolating consequences of the alienating acts of a headstrong, wicked, and rebellious minority.
Okay. All right. So, now the point is, obviously not to talk a lot about headstrongness and wickedness and rebellion. Okay. They're just, what are they trying to do here? He's trying to say, okay, you know about that whole stuff that, if you've read the book at all, you know all about the rebellion and you've spent lots of time. Let's put another twist on that. Let's understand a little bit more directly, relative to God's omnipresence, why there's, severing circuits and all this sort of stuff involved in that. Okay? So, there's the indirectness of him working through the second, third, and paradise sources and centers. Then there's something that's even more indirect about his presence. Okay, when you bring in experiential deity. Okay, so this whole bit about the evolving presence of the Supreme Being, and this bit about it, his presence being determined by the en masse recognition of God. Okay, so en masse, the whole. Okay, we've talked about this a lot. How does this work? You have en masse things and beings, the whole of the finite. Let's focus on the finite. That whole has a relationship to the individuality of the whole. It's the individuality of the whole. The whole has a direct relationship with the individuality of that whole, with the universal mother, which, on the personal purposes side, is the evolving presence, in the finite, of the Supreme Being. So you have the whole, the relationship to the individuality of the whole, and then through the individuality of the whole, you have a relationship to the transcendent Supreme Being. And the Supreme Being is a very directly you can think of the Supreme Being, especially in this circumstance, as a downstepped expression of the Universal Father. See, so, now we start at the top. The Father is downstepped to that which is encompasses this the finite, the Supreme Being, transcendently encompasses the finite. So you downstep the Father to the Supreme Being, and then you downstep the Supreme Being down into the finite, in a personal sense that we're talking about here, as the Universal Mother, the individuality of the whole, and then through the individuality of the whole, this distinction is vital. For in a cosmic system, the individual members are not connected with each other except in relation to the whole and through the individuality of the whole. That's what the en masse, except in relation to the whole and then through the individuality of the whole. Okay, so you can think of, if you follow it all the way back up the chain, you can think of the presence of the Universal Mother in the finite as the presence of the Father. But it's not a direct presence. it's so indirect that by the time it comes down the chain, it goes from, you know, infinite he to supreme he down to finite she and then to you. It goes from he to she even. It's so indirect. Okay, but, see, you know, there is a first source and center of all things and beings. The finite presence is a thing. You know, and it, you can follow it back up to the first source and center. Yeah. So that's what they're invoking there. Even more indirect presence, omnipresence, or expression of this omnipresence. Yeah.
Somebody's going to shine the light of truth before the celestials.
Well, okay. Let's not go so much that way. Let's just notice directly what they're bringing in about this. Something that you may not have thought about before, about the whole quarantine thing, why they're doing it. See, they're doing it because if they allow that disruption into the system as a whole, the system has a less holistic character, which means it has less relationship to the individuality of the whole, which means it has less relationship to the Supreme Being, which means it has less relationship to the Universal Father. And they don't want that less relationship. So they'll build a nice little wall around this, you know.
Bubble it off.
It's, you know, it's ultimately about the relationship to this omnipresence that's in play. They don't want to disrupt that. Just like we, you know, see, now you take it back. Oh, yeah. And they did find a way to talk about the disruption that I can do within my mind. And okay, see, they're showing us all the same picture here. You have a disruption within, and you know how you think about that whole issue, and then there's the disruption without. Okay, and just notice all they're adding to that understanding about the process is that there was, you, by the quarantining act, you supplied the favorable conditions for there to be enough integrity still somewhere that someone could objectively think about what positive things could result from this. There would be no objective space that you could calmly think about the positive potentials of the rebellion if you let the rebellion disrupt the whole system. See, so that they're just pointing out there's no magic here. It all has to be done very literally. All right.
While the Father parentally encircuits all his sons, all personalities, his influence in them is limited by the remoteness of their origin from the second and the third persons of deity, and augmented as their destiny attainment nears such levels. The fact of God's presence in creature minds is determined by whether or not they are indwelt by Father fragments, such as the mystery monitors. But his effective presence is determined by the degree of cooperation accorded these indwelling adjusters by the minds of their sojourn.
Two visual things that I want to add to, you know, what is obvious there from what they're saying. So this, look at what they're invoking. Okay, limited by the remoteness of their origin from the second and third persons of deity. How are you being engaged? You're being engaged by the sevenfold. Okay, let's just look at the one thing that they're kind of directly invoking, the Father fragment. Okay, the thought adjuster is a fragment of the infinite upholder. Okay, if there's going to be a relationship down to, you know, where you start, look at what comes first. There's the second source and center, there's the third. Okay, you're started clear down here, very remote from the second and third sources and centers that are immediately next to the Father. They're just literally invoking this image. You're started clear down here as a seventh circler, which is a long ways away from first and second circle, where the Son and the Spirit are, in relationship to the Son and the Spirit. Okay? So this is, they're just directly invoking that. You know, you need to get up here closer to them because you can't get to him except through them. You know, as you're going through Avoni, you can't get to the recognition of the Father until you first recognize the Spirit and then the Son, and then you can recognize the Father. Or if you're standing on the Isle of Paradise, you can only be in the direct presence of the Father through the Spirit and the Son, because they surround His presence. And this is always the case. So they're just invoking that. And then there's the fact of effective, italicized words there. But His effective presence is determined by the degree of cooperation accorded these indwelling adjusters by the minds of their sojourn. Okay, so if I try to really consecrate my will, is that all I need to do? No. It didn't say, that it's about the will of it's the mind. You must consecrate your mind to the universal harmony of God the Mother in order for the Father to be effective. The Father can be a fact in your mind, but the effectiveness is zero if you haven't taken delight in cultivating a relationship with the harmony, that is the presence of the Mother in the local universe of Nebadon. His effectiveness is wholly limited, essentially wholly limited by how much you've consecrated your mind, how much you've done this second consecration. Father, existential deity, so there's a fact. Mother, experiential deity, so there's actual doing, it's actually effective. Okay? The root there is facera again, the verb to do, okay? of effective, okay? All right? So, we understand that now. So just notice, you'll see this, every place you look in the book, it's very carefully worded like this. It's very important to recognize it's not about how much you impose your spirit purposing on your relationship to spirit and make that spirit more like the Father. God is spirit. You need to bring that down into the mind. And just like when you brought the He of the Supreme Being down into the finite, it became the She of the Universal Mother. That's just like going from the spirit down into the mindal energy. And that the adjuster is down in the mind. It's not up there in that spirit that you have, a grip on with your personality. It's down in your mind.
The fluctuations of the Father's presence are not due to the changeableness of God. The Father does not retire in seclusion because He has been slighted. His affections are not alienated because of the creature's wrongdoing. Rather, having been endowed with the power of choice concerning Himself, His children, in the exercise of that choice, directly determine the degree and limitations of the Father's divine influence in their own hearts and souls. The Father has freely bestowed Himself upon us without limit and without favor. He is no respecter of persons, planets, systems, or universes. In the sectors of time, He confers differential honor only on the paradise personalities of God the Sevenfold, the coordinate creators of the finite universes.
Okay, see, so two key things to note. The one that Chris was, was feeling in the previous paragraph. Right there, the Father's divine influence, not only in your soul, but in your heart, in that space within your mind that the creative Mother Spirit has carved out, a domain within, at the core of your mind, where the adjuster dwells. The adjuster is within your mind, in that heart of your mind, and, of course, in your soul, too. But that's a secondary issue, pretty much, in this life. Okay? The adjuster's presence is in your soul. I mean, you're glad it has a presence in your soul because that's, it makes a soul. So, okay. But the main thing in this life, pretty much, is that presence within your heart. And that heart is not in your spirit. That heart is in your mind. Because She gave you the mind, and she carved that domain within it. It's her adjutant mind and her Holy Spirit that carved the domain. She's a downstepped expression of the infinite capacity. She has a capacity nature that she can bestow upon you. She can carve a space. She's place. And within that place, there can be direction.
Yeah, isn't that the higher mind, the balanced mind, and the seventh adjutant? That more or less is being the mind?
The gateway into the heart of your mind is through the seventh adjutant. There's no doorway into the heart on the level of the flesh. There's no doorway into the heart on the level of feelings. No matter how much you feel, no matter how far you go to the extreme limits of the level of feelings, you will find no door into the heart. The door is up at the third level. Only through the seventh adjutant, only through the spirit of wisdom, can you get into the heart. Only through the level of mind can you get into the heart.
You're right.
Okay, then just one little twist. You know, I've been constantly, you know, holding up the sevenfold chart to point at it and talk about things. You know, it seemed like it was just coming naturally. And what do you get? It's a closing comment. There it is. God the sevenfold. The divine counselor brings the sevenfold in. See, when all is said and done, you may have noticed that this was discussion had a lot to do with the sevenfold, is what he's saying at the end there. But then the one other little twist. Notice what he says. Okay, he is no respecter of persons, planets, systems, or universes. In the sectors of time, he confers differential honor only on. Oh, wait a minute, I thought he was no respecter of persons. There is an exception. Because there's two types of persons. There's two types of personality. There's creature personality and creator personality. And there is a differential between how he engages a creature and how he engages a creator. See, he does bestow a differential honor. It's obviously, you know, creator is higher than creature. A differential honor on the sevenfold creator. Yeah, of course he's one of those. But it's from that universal Father, you know, that he's engaging those other creators in God the sevenfold. Okay, so that's an important little factual twist too. You know, how many times in the book do they, you know, repeat the no respecter of person thing? And you can kind of get sort of just sucked into that and let your spiritual consciousness blur all the details. It's like, well, yeah, it's pretty unity-like, but there are two, you know, there is one differential in there. You need to discriminate in your mind between creature and creator in order to understand God's relationship, you know, for one thing. But probably most importantly, if I don't definitively distinguish between creature and creator, I might slowly start to drift into thinking, well, maybe I'm a creator too. Yeah, we all know that it's inexorable. If you don't clearly keep that separate in your mind, that those are two absolutely distinct types of personality. They do not overlap. You are in no way a creator. Man cannot cause growth. All you can do is supply favorable conditions. Only a creator can cause growth. And you are not a creator. No matter how many, you know, incredibly divine gifts are bestowed upon you, you're never going to be a creator. You're just a richly blessed creature. Okay, so, yep.
I was just wondering why the differential honor for the sevenfold and not the other facets of deity.
Well, I mean, there's a differential honor. There's a differential honor on, you know, God the ultimate and God the absolute and stuff. Okay, I mean, and the architects of the master universe and the consummator of universe destiny, you know. Okay, but they're, you know, this whole, you know, like I said, this whole thing has been about understanding the finite domain. In the finite domain, the creators are here. These are the creators in the finite domain.
I just wish they had used the word only, because it sounds like only the sevenfold and not.
Again.
Well, it says in the sectors of time.
Right. See, in the sectors of time, he confers differential honor.
Plus, those are attributes. Right. That's an attribute right. type study.
Right.
It was the only that confused me that right. way.
But notice, you know, I mean, see, Jeanette had a really good, you know, read the whole sentence. That's always a good start. But even you know, it still is possible that there could be more distortion of meaning. You know, you have to always challenge yourself. They're not always going to put that prepositional phrase at the beginning of every sentence. Don't forget now, we're only, you know. I mean, you have to, you know, if you're in a context where you're talking about the in-time thing, you know, they're not going to repeat that in every sentence. You've got to keep that in mind. If you don't, if you take some sentence in that section out of context, it's going to have more distortion of meaning.
Yeah,
you know, don't take it into the absentite. It's a sentence about the finite. You know, keep it in the context. So, you know, that's that. The onus is on us always. You know, to be preventing us from, you know, ourselves from drifting off into misunderstanding. So. All right. Sure enough, it took not only an hour and a half, it took 2 hours to talk about section one. So I guess we better wrap it up right there. I guess we'll just forward the tension to next week. If we have a nice little chunk of time at the end of a study group rather than forcing another section and going kind of late like this, we'll spend a little time talking about the difference between social equity and social equality. We want to give that a little chunk of time to reflect on that. All right, so let's take a moment here.